This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Wednesday, August 13th, 2014. I'm Caleb Brown. The Islamic State, as it moves through an unstable Iraq, is more than willing to display its brutality, just as the president begins a new round of airstrikes in the country. Chris Preble, Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute, evaluates the situation now unfolding.
You know, I think we see this intervention, the latest intervention in Iraq, the president announced last week and kind of explained a little bit more before he went on his vacation to Martha's Vineyard what this all entailed. And, you know, there's obviously concern on a couple levels, ISIS, the Islamic State, making some gains, persecuting this group, the Yazidis, is under enormous pressure. And so there was a humanitarian component, but I think perhaps more important for the United States, at least at some level, is the threat posed to Erbil, the capital of the Kurdish territory, you know, a very important city that where they had made some gains. The Kurds initially didn't seem capable of stopping them. I think there was a concern there, and then always there's the doubts about the Iraqi government and the inability of Nouri al-Maliki and the governing coalition to maintain enough support. So there's a lot going on in Iraq over the last week. I think there are two types of criticisms of the president's intervention. On the one hand, you have people mainly on the left, but not exclusively, who are concerned about the risk that a limited intervention, either just purely for humanitarian purposes or to protect Americans in Erbil, that limited interventions don't stay limited. This is a valid concern. I think we've seen this a number of times, and so there's a number of people have written about that. But I'm actually perhaps more intrigued by those people who have the opposite concern, which is this is not nearly enough, that we should be doing more, that we, of course, should never have left in the first place, that we should have been prepared to leave thousands or tens of thousands of American troops in Iraq and that this wouldn't have happened supposedly. It's the usual suspects like John McCain and others who have been making this argument to their credit to pretty consistently. But you also had an incident over the weekend where Hillary Clinton gave an interview to The Atlantic's Jeff Goldberg talking about kind of criticizing Obama's foreign policy and the decision not to intervene in Syria as being a key episode of weakness of his indecisiveness or unwillingness to use military power. So there's a lot of, the president's ratings, approval ratings are declining, including on foreign policy. So there's a lot going on. And so I think trying to sort out these criticisms is important, not just for what it means for Iraq, but also what it means for U.S. foreign policy more generally.
But we have the president of the United States essentially calling for Nouri al-Maliki to step down in so many words. Mm-hmm. And the other option from the other side of this, the John McCain types who are arguing we never should have left, it seems that the choice between permanent occupation and telling these leaders that just a few years ago the United States leadership was loudly saying we're going to let these people stand on their own two feet, mm-hmm. we're going to let them be in charge of their government. It just seems like that gesture at the time is meaningless.
Well, I think it certainly didn't work out the way they had hoped, right? So on the one hand, the people like McCain believe that having large numbers of troops on the ground give the United States leverage and that threatening to withdraw them or increase them, that's where it gets a little confusing. It's like, well, we were going to leave and we didn't, but if we had stayed, would Nouri al-Maliki have behaved differently? I think there's a good argument that he wouldn't have behaved differently because believing that we had his back no matter what stupid things he did, then we didn't want our credibility to be on the line. And we saw that in the case of he undertook a number of military operations in the height of the surge in 2008 where we were trying to convince him to make certain compromise politically and he refused to do so. But there is this underlying belief, and I think it's not much more than that, it's a belief that the United States had considerable leverage when we had troops on the ground, and we lost that leverage when we withdrew. I don't believe that's true, and I think that this goes back to why do politicians, and Maliki in particular, why do they behave the way they do? Well, sometimes it's just because they're not very smart, but I think the better explanation is that they recognize there are certain – they have a coalition, and that a sufficient number of people in that coalition support what they're doing, they're going to continue to do it. In a parliamentary system, of course, if you lose a coalition, you lose power. At least that's the way – that's the way it works out. We're going to see if it works out that way in Iraq, because the evidence is that while there is some weakening within the coalition, even another Dawah Party politician now, you know, challenging Maliki whether or not he will step down peacefully.
However awful, and I'm certain he was awful, Saddam Hussein was, the reports that we're receiving now about this Islamic State group are far less sympathetic, and I think there's got to be a serious concern that Americans may well be convinced to support additional action.
That's right. I think that just given the sheer brutality of this group and their willingness to post their evidence of their brutality on YouTube and elsewhere is shocking, and I think a number of people are concerned not just about what they can do in Iraq, but beyond that. I think, again, I think the safe haven argument, the notion that they can create a functioning state and then from that state plan terrorist attacks elsewhere in the world, I think it's a bit overdone. It's been overdone. We know for a fact that terrorists don't always need a safe haven in which to operate, or not much of one. We also know that a number of quite safe places, are not sources of terrorism, things like that. So it's more complicated. But I also think there's going to be there may be a renewed interest in kind of providing support to secular but authoritarian governments, kind of going back to the argument from the Cold War era or since, that the only alternative to extremism is authoritarianism and secularism. And I don't think that's true either. I think we need to be careful about believing that there are only two options that will work for U.S. interests, and to be a little bit more sophisticated about it and looking at these on a case-by-case basis.
What authority does the president cite in launching attacks in Iraq now?
They cite the authorization to use military force in 2002 that was granted by Congress to President Bush, and I think again there are problems with that, but it's not the same as the intervention in Libya, for example, which had absolutely not even the patina of congressional authorization. They cited the UN Security Council as sufficient. So I've gotten some responses from readers on emails, saying, well, what about this question about the authority? And I said, well, it's not ideal, but it's better than some of the alternatives. This would be an argument, frankly, for first of all, Congress not granting the president blanket authority to wage war whenever he feels like it, just by naming the country, which is what the authorization to use force against Iraq was. But it's also an argument for having sunset provisions in those authorities, to actually have them terminate at a set time, or at least force Congress to go back on a record and reauthorize. They haven't done that, and therefore you have potentially an open-ended authorization for this continued for these types of activities continuing.
President Obama doesn't like boots on the ground, and that is true. And I think I'd like to believe that's to his credit, understanding that there is a slippery slope toward moving into that kind of engagement. But also, he seems very willing to drop a lot of bombs in places, which in many cases you would hope makes the situation better. But in most cases, it seems makes the situation worse.
Right. Well, it's certainly not a silver bullet. We would like to be able to limit the exposure of U.S. personnel to casualties when those. But the issue should be at the outset. What's the vital interest being addressed here? Does the military action being undertaken serve our interests? And if it does, then there are some cases where we are willing to put our troops in harm's way because they're serving a higher interest. I think if anything, the reluctance on the part of the president to make a case for deeper involvement belies his belief that it's really not worth that much in the first place. It seems to me he's trying to assuage some of his critics who are going after him for not doing enough. But he's also not willing, I think, again, for perfectly sensible reasons, not willing to go to the American people and say effectively that two-thirds of them are wrong about Iraq and that we're going to refight this war all over again.
Chris Preble is Vice President for Defense and Foreign Policy Studies at the Cato Institute. Read more of his work at cato.org.